You're listening to the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. FanDuel has made it easier than ever to see how your bets are doing without even opening the app. Now you can get the latest updates, follow along in real time directly from your phone's lock screen. Yeah, or Apple Watch. No login required. Just head to your My Bets page to turn it on. If you don't already have it, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today to get in on the action. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of this episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Coming up, I'm going to talk about a new sport I just heard about. Basketball. It's next.
Für alle ein Fest. Zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Wolwig Naturell. 1,5 Liter für nur 49 Cent. Zuzüglich Pfand. Oder Almare Räucherlachs XXL. 220 Gramm für nur 3,49 €. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. I put up a new Rewatchables last night. We did Someone to Watch Over Me. It is a movie with Tom Berenger, Mimi Rogers, and Lorraine Bracco from 1987, directed by Ridley Scott. It is an absolute cable classic. It was a one for us, for me and Chris Ryan. I broke down during this pod about as hard as I've ever laughed during a podcast. It gets super goofy. And after we do one for us, we always like to do a giant movie. So a giant movie is coming next week. Stay tuned for that. I hope you're checking out theringer.com. Hope you're checking about all of our Ringer podcast stuff, the Bill Simmons YouTube channel, which we go live on Sundays with Russillo. We kind of staggered it. We did a late live and an early one with Russillo and Van on Sunday. That was super fun. FanDuel, by the way, I've been working with them. We're going to start this new gimmick on Wednesday with Lakers Timberwolves game 5. You can tail or fade my pick. Each week, I'm going to pick a player prop. I'm going to go in. I'm going to say what I think is going to happen. You can either believe me or not believe me. I just hit on Sunday, I hit a plus 921 four-leg parlay. It was pretty impressive, I got to say. Let's see if I can keep the momentum going. So I have LeBron over 9.5 rebounds, I think is going to be the one. You can either back me or you can go against me. But if you do it, FanDuel is offering you an opportunity to have a 50% boost either way. So you win if you like what I thought or you want to go against what I thought. Anyway, check out FanDuel Sportsbook on Wednesday to see what boost I'm betting, what bet I'm boosting. I just told you what it was. And then you can apply that profit boost. I love when the customers ride with me. I've been decent. So there you go. Coming up on this podcast, Kurt Goldsberry and I, we watched 4 basketball games. I was watching some hockey too, and we were reacting right afterwards to everything we saw. And then a little bit later, Zach Lowe, he came on last week on a Tuesday and we banked something fun. We did it again this week. We want to talk about Draymond Green and we want to look forward to Timberwolves Lakers. So that is the podcast today. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. Recording this part of the podcast, 9:45 Pacific time. I thought the Clippers-Denver game was going to be a lot better. I thought Kurt Goldsberry and I would be talking about all these unbelievable narratives. Instead, all the narratives came in the first game of the day and the second game of the day, and then the games got worse as they went along. But Denver kind of put it on the Clippers tonight, Kirk. I did not see this coming. I thought Denver was lucky to be 2-2. I thought the Clippers were a better team. And Jamal Murray became playoff Jamal Murray again tonight. Harden was invisible. Where do you want to start? What jumped out to you tonight?
You got to start with Jamal Murray. I mean, that was the game they needed from him in this series, in this exact moment. It was his best playoff game since the bubble. The Clippers looked tired, though. The Clippers looked, I don't know if it was elevation or they just hadn't had enough rest, but they looked like they were slower to the basketball. They looked old. And you sort of alluded to it, Bill. James Harden did not look very good. I think the headline's got to be Jamal Murray, but there is a little bit of an underwhelming current from these Los Angeles Clippers to me.
Well, if you said before the game, Jamal Murray is going to have his best game of the playoffs and his best game in a while. Mm-hmm. And also Russell Westbrook's going to come off the bench and score 21 points in 23 minutes. I would have said, oh, the Clippers are in trouble. But I'm with you. They look slow to the ball.
Yeah,
there was a moment in the fourth quarter for about 4 or 5 minutes where they looked like they did earlier in the series. But other than that, the Harden thing, it's just dumbfounding. I can't, you know, he's now in his mid-30s. He was in the 2008 draft, 2009 draft. I can't even remember. And this has just been such a huge part of his resume, his career, how we're going to remember him 30 years from now as like this amazing player. And just over and over again, it wasn't quite there in the playoffs. They really needed a big James Harden game, either last game or this game, one of those two. Does he have it in him anymore? Maybe are we expecting too much? Because I voted for him for 13th All-NBA this year. I thought maybe, you know, one of the first five games he could own. I guess not.
Now, 3 of 9 tonight. I mean, players that shot more than him. Zubac had 15 shots. Kawhi had 15 shots. Norman Powell had 12 shots. Bogdanovich had 11 shots. 3 of 9, Bill. And then, okay, maybe he's getting it done with the dimes. No, barely had 5 assists. A lot of those were later in the game. I'm ready to say if it's a big game, like a game 5 and big series like this, I'm almost more expectant of this kind of performance from him right at this point, which is sad. So I don't think we're ever going to see it. Now, maybe we get another chance here in game 6 or game 7, and he tells me I'm wrong with a performance that just turns back the clock. But this was just a complete no-show from a guy who's had a bunch of no-shows over the last 10 years in big moments like this.
Yeah, I did a rare tweet. I tweeted that they had him guarding Jokic in the second half so we could remember that he was in the game, because it was too hard to tell. They're built so that they could survive kind of an offensive no-show game from Harden.
Yeah.
The problem for them was Denver went up a notch. They kind of stayed the same. Denver got Westbrook back, which was huge for them because that was just 23 extra minutes from a bench guy. They played Jordan a little bit more. I'm with you. Maybe the elevation going against an older team helped a tiny bit. But then, you know, I start thinking about some of the stuff I used to write about back when my fingers worked. And this is a Clippers team that has just been snake bitten really since they moved to Southern California. And that loss they had, game 4, where they fought all the way back and then they lose on an alley-oop where the ball seemed like it was touching the tip of Aaron Gordon's fingers and it ends up counting because they couldn't overrule it. And that loss was so devastating. I'm watching the game tonight. I'm like, man, maybe that beat the fight out of them a little bit. I don't know.
This is a team that was supposed to be one of the best defenses in the playoffs. One of the best defensive rebounding teams in the playoffs. The stat that I kept going back to is I think they ranked first in defensive rebounding percentage all year long. And then in this playoffs, they ranked 15 out of 16 in that category. Some of that is because of Jokic. But this is also a defense when Jamal Murray gets going. You'd think Kawhi Leonard or Chris Dunn or some combination of Ty Lue schemes could do it. And they just didn't have the fight tonight at all. And I don't know how many points did the Clippers end up with? 131, Bill Simmons.
The Nuggets.
The Nuggets ended up with 131, Bill. And that's just, to me, that's a dumb guy stat, but that's what you need to know. You're not going to win a lot of playoff games if you give up 131 points. So this is a proud defense that just laid an egg tonight.
Yeah, and you think like big picture with the Clippers, it's never easy with them in a playoff series. In the history of their franchise since they moved to Southern California, they've never won a playoff series in four or five games ever.
Yeah.
Like think about how impossible that is.
That's crazy.
They had the 2021 where Kawhi is averaging 30 a game and looking like one of the best guys in the league. He gets hurt. They end up losing the Western Finals, only time they ever made it. They blew the 3-1 lead to Denver in 2020. They blew that 19-point lead to the Rockets in 2015 when they had a chance to close and go to the West Finals. They blew that OKC series in 2014 when Chris Paul, the point guard, just completely fell apart in game 5 when they could have had a lead coming back to Clippers. They had that 2006 against the Suns when they put in Daniel Ewing and he fouled Rajah Bell on a 3 and the Suns ended up winning in OT. This is just the legacy of this team. And if you talk to any of their fans, It's almost a little like junior Red Sox-ish before 2004. They build the hopes up. They convince themselves this is the year, and then they get kicked in the nuts. I still think they can win game six. What's a little scary is that Jokic didn't put a lot of miles on himself tonight. No. Murray carried everything. Westbrook carried some. They were able to rest him, and he could just snap his fingers in game six and dominate them like he did in game four. It's looking bleak for the Clippers. I might have been wrong in this series, Kirk. I'm bummed.
I was wrong too. I remember, but I was like very scared coming into the playoffs because I was like looking at this Clippers team. They have that history you just mentioned, but then they have James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, and Ben Simmons, who, by the way,
What
a beautiful shot tonight. He got to the just inside the paint. He rises up for that little half hook and he almost hit the rim. God bless him.
It was to the left of the basket. He shot it at 10:30 at night on a clock. It just was diagonal to the left. It was rough.
But on Verno's podcast like 3 weeks ago, when all the trends that I look at throughout the year are pointing to the Clippers are the best analytic team closing the season. And
except
I said
they're the
Verno,
Clippers.
Except they're the Clippers. And I was like, I'm not going to know what to do. I picked them to win this series in seven games too. I wish I could switch it. They just haven't been there. And I think they could win game six, but I just didn't, unless they completely reinvent themselves for a game seven, what we saw in Denver tonight's not going to get it done, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, the counter is they have been there. Kawhi's been the finals MVP in two different cities. Harden's been in the playoffs for his entire career. Derrick Jones was in the finals last year. Norm Powell has been in big playoff games. Ty Lue coached in the finals a bunch of times. Van Gundy was in big games.
Derrick Jones was in the finals last year. Yeah.
This is about as experienced of a random team as you're going to get. They don't have the best part in the series, which is a problem. Mm-hmm. And they're just trying everything possible to mess with them. But I think the best thing that happened to the Nuggets in this series, other than Jamal Murray seems to be getting better as it's going along, Christian Brown's doing... it really seems like he's in Harden's head a little bit. He's low to the ground and seems to have a sense of that herky-jerky style that Harden has. And he's doing the defensive herky-jerky version of it. And he's moving back and forth with it. And I think Harden's just having a lot of trouble going by him. In game four, in the fourth quarter, I think because Brown was tired, Harden started going by him in the fourth quarter. But I think it might have been tired legs more than anything. But Brown seems really confident against him.
Yeah, I think if we say, hey, there's Harden, Leonard in one corner, and then you have Jokic and Murray in the other corner, the second tier guys, the Brown and Aaron Gordon, obviously, have been great. Those, like, guy number three and guy number four, those have been the Nuggets guys that have gone. Christian Brown hit that huge three, I thought, to end the third quarter in this game, which really set the tone. He's really an emotional leader. That's sort of a big thing for him. And you mentioned earlier, Russell Westbrook, getting a performance like that too is just a huge gift, and another reason they put him over the top tonight.
Did Denver watching them these last five games, and especially Game Four, Game Five, did it change your opinion at all about whether they could actually throw some haymakers at OKC?
The defense is still a big red flag to me. The defense is—I don't know if they're going to keep up with the Oklahoma City Thunder if they play them in the next round. So I still think that's their Achilles heel. I don't think they'll be able to hold up on that end of the court against that young, ferocious, deep team with so much rest and so much energy coming into that series. So they've won me over with this starting five, the Murray, Jokic, Porter, who has come around in this series.
It feels like after a game one no-show.
and getting called out, kind of. I mean, by the Joker. But that starting group, I think, can hang. Where I have trouble, Bill, is below that line where the Thunder are just, they almost have a second starting five. And this team has, Russell Westbrook and DeAndre Jordan.
OKC versus Denver, if that's what we end up with. It's an MVP battle too, which is always fun.
Oh, that's great. And it's a big Hartenstein test. That's why they got that guy.
Well, and also Denver got rid of Hartenstein.
Yeah.
James Harden, man. I don't know. I had a couple of people in my life who are like, why are you so high on the Clippers? They have James Harden. I'm like, no, James Harden was good this year. It's like,
it's different
he's
time,
James
Dad.
Harden.
Yeah. It's different, dude.
It's like, no, this time is different. I'm the one for Kim Kardashian. She told me this is it. It's going to work out this time for her. That she's going to live happily ever after. We'll see what happens Thursday night. I'm going. The crowd will be great. We're due for, if you had to pick a 7-game series out of the available choices, which are probably this one, Golden State-Houston, even though Golden State's up 3-1, Minnesota, and the Lakers, which will be 3-2 after tomorrow when the Lakers shoot 68 free throws, or Detroit versus the Knicks. Who would you go for a 7-gamer? Because we're getting one. That's just the rule.
I feel like Detroit needs to win one of these games. They had a tough weekend back home in Michigan. I think they're going to win game 6 back at Little Caesars.
You want to talk about that game?
Yeah, I thought it was a great game. You know, New York is fortunate that there wasn't a late foul call at the end of Sunday's game.
Yes, they were.
But they've been playing with fire in this series, and they've been getting away with it. I think, you know, they had a poorly timed injury here at the end of this game. But, you know, the Pistons have been ahead, Bill, in every fourth quarter of this series. I think in game one, they weren't ready for the smoke of the moment. But since then, these games all could have gone either way to an extent. And I think tonight, Cade Cunningham, they played better pick and roll offense than the New York Knicks, and they took it to them. And I'm not shocked, but I was impressed.
25, 10, and 10 for Cade. 7 turnovers. It's been an extra 3 turnovers a game for him because he has the ball so much. But the stat that jumped out to me, Detroit 7 for 29 from 3, and they went on the road. That's really hard to do.
Yeah.
The Knicks, 15 for 33 from 3. So they were +8 on threes.
Right.
And they lost at home. But the key to this game, so Detroit, they shoot 8 for 29 from 3. No surprise. They've not exactly, if Beasley's not going, not exactly like an awesome 3-point team. But the Knicks, 9 for 25 from 3. Right? So
yeah.
Red flag number one. Red flag number two, Brunson 4 for 16. And it's hard to tell how hurt he is. Sometimes you can do, like, he got hurt in game 4 and he came back and you get the adrenaline 20 minutes before your ankle starts to feel even worse than it did. He definitely looked hobbled around. He goes out at some point, probably like, 3-4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Then Tibbs has a chance to put him and Hart back in and doesn't use his last time out. And those guys are just standing there for a minute and a half. One of many bizarre Tibbs coaching decisions. But I what you said before about the quarters, this series has been even for a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And Detroit, they take the leads early in these games or they're close. They hold like that. They're never like having really swoons. Their defense and their rebounding's always been able to keep them around. And Cade's been, you know, the most consistently good player in the series. If I'm a Knicks fan now, I'm just putting miles, even if I get through the series, I'm just putting miles on my guys who already seem worn down with the Celtics just getting rest and waiting. But do you think who do you think wins a game 6 between these two teams based on what you've seen? I think it's going to be a hard task
for
the Knicks.
Detroit played better basketball tonight. You know, I think the play that sealed it for Detroit, in my mind, one of the most beautiful passes of the playoffs, but Detroit just picked apart the Knicks in the pick and roll game. Jalen Duren is growing up in front of us. This kid, he's a monster in person. If you haven't seen him, it's just like one of these guys. It's just a different size than everybody else. One of the great rebounders in these playoffs. But I think like there was a pick and roll near the end. You know, the Knicks sent 2 towards Cade, who ended up at the right elbow. And who was it who snuck into the dunks? Asar Thompson, who also played a great game.
He was awesome today. Yeah.
Sneaks. Yeah. Cat falls asleep. And Cade throws that pass, a rocket pass, right into the dunker, and Oster finishes it. And it wasn't quite curtains because the Knicks made some shots, but that was just I think really emblematic of a bread and butter play where the Cade Cunningham pick and roll with Duren, sometimes it was Paul Reed, is just basic basketball, and it looks better, especially with a hobbled Brunson, than what the Knicks are able to counter with. So I think the Pistons have a very good defense. They're very young and motivated to win this game six at home, and the fundamental basketball they're playing right now. And one other thing is, like, you talk a lot about Tibbs coaching. I know that. Can we post up Karl Towns on Tobias Harris, please? He just dominates him when
It's like they're afraid he's going to get offensive fouls or something. I can't think of another reason.
I have no idea, but every time they do it, it's like there's no answer. Tobias Harris has no chance.
My rule, Kirk Goldsberry. What? If you do something and the defense completely overreacts and doubles it because they don't have an answer for it, maybe do it again.
Yeah.
Give it a whirl. That might be a sign that it's something to do.
Particularly if Jalen Brunson is playing on one foot. I don't know what his injury is. I'm not speaking out of turn here, but if your star is hurt, you have this other guy, this other bread and butter action, you could increase. And if it's going to be Tobias Harris defending Karl Towns on the block, dude, make them pay for that. Go old school. I haven't seen enough of that, those adjustments from Tibbs.
I thought the Knicks were going to win in five. It seemed like they were going to win in five tonight, and then Detroit had other ideas. I just continue to be underwhelmed by the Knicks. And I know now people could say, no, Brunson's hurt. Like, well, everybody on that team plays huge minutes. The more minutes you play, the odds are going to increase that you're going to have an injury. It's just the way it goes. But in general, like, I don't know. They did. Like, I'm not afraid of them. I said this before the playoffs. I'll say it again. I was way more afraid of playing Indiana than the Knicks. I think Indiana knows who they are. I think they have an identity. And the Knicks, not sure what their identity is. It's a lot of Brunson. It's a lot of standing around. They can have these little spurts. Towns can get hot every once in a while. Sometimes their wings look awesome. Other times I forget they're out there. For all the quote unquote awesome defense that their wings were supposed to bring, like over and over again, you see guys get the kind of shots and plays they want, like Cade. You would think like with Bridges and Ananobi, it's like we should be able to shut down Cade or limit him or whatever. And it, you know, I don't think that's happened. And a lot of it has to do with CJ able to get the switches he wants. I get it. But I just don't, the balance of the team just doesn't seem right to me. And I felt that way for a while.
Yeah, there's two things. The interior defense with Towns, when they made the Towns deal, that was always the red flag to me. Are we really going to see a playoff defense anchored with Karl Anthony Towns? And as I said, at this key moment, you know, it's not his fault, but that's who you're relying on to be your rim protector. He's not always great at that. And then the other thing is sometimes the offense looks like crap. And there's multiple possessions in big moments where it's just Brunson pounding the air out of the ball and everybody else standing around. And there's either going to be a foul or some kind of fadeaway and nobody else is going to touch the basketball. And I hate that. I hate watching it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the players playing alongside, it's just not.
I don't think the fans like it either. You can feel like there's a weird energy from these Knicks games. The crowds were way better last year, I think. This year, there's a nervous energy and you can feel the frustration. It's coming through the TV.
Yeah, the pick and roll game too. It's like they only scored 27 points in the pick and roll game, and the Pistons doubled them up in that category. Again, Cade Cunningham. It's a lot of people's introduction to him, but you know, there's a danger because if they do win in Detroit, look out, Bill. If the Pistons win in Detroit, look out.
Well, so that game's going to be when? Is that a Thursday game? That is, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's not great for the Knicks, right?
That's two games later and Brunson's hobbing around and Hart got hurt at the end of that game and they have no bench to begin with. And
dude, that's
the
such
Pistons
an under,
are young.
That's such an underrated part of this. Like Cleveland getting out in four games and OKC the Celts getting out of there today.
The Celts punted on Holiday for the series and kept their fingers crossed that he could get healed and they got out of it.
Yeah, and they just need all the treatment. Some cold plunges, you know, all that rest. And these other teams are going to be flying back and forth, putting more miles on their bodies, twisting ankles. It's such an underrated part of this. So it was good that Boston emerged relatively unscathed from that Orlando series.
Well, I want to talk about that. Let's take a quick break and we'll talk Boston, Orlando. Hey, it's NBA playoff time. Get in on the action with FanDuel Sportsbook, our friends, America's number one sportsbook. You think you know it's going to go down? Well, check out Wednesdays because you can make those predictions count with the Hump Day Parlay Profit Boost. Weekly parlay specials tied to top point scores, double doubles, whatever you want. I'm also going to be doing a little special gimmick that you can find on FanDuel Sportsbook where you can tail or fade me. I'm going to release my prop on Wednesday for the Lakers Timberwolves game. And I think it's going to be LeBron over under rebounds because I like the over. I think it's 9.5. But you can tail me on that or you can go against me. You can have either choice. Choose your own adventure. Don't be a spectator during this awesome NBA postseason. Head to FanDuel.com/BS and download America's number one sportsbook and make every moment more. You can do hump day bets. You can do my little tail or fade bet. You must be 21 plus in present in select states or 18 plus in present in D.C., opt-in required bonus issued as non-withdrawable profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including any token expiration and max wager amount. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Degree Original Cool Rush Deodorant. Remember last year, people got really mad when Degree changed their Cool Rush formula. One dude even started a petition. What was up with that guy? Well, guess what? Degree listened. They admitted they messed up. They're bringing back the original Cool Rush scent. And thank God. You've got to love when a brand can own its mistakes. And it's in Walmart, Target, and other stores right now for under $4. Grab some. Find out why it's been the number one men's antiperspirant for the last decade. By the way, you should put that on, especially we're about to hit the summer. It's getting sweaty in the summers. The original Degree Cool Rush is back and it smells like victory for all of us. So Boston, Orlando, I was expecting a little bit more of a slugfest. It was a weird game. It was close. Paolo got in foul trouble. And then the Celts went on one of those runs that they had a lot last year. They've had them intermittently this year, but more on the road than at home, weirdly. But they'll just have these third quarters or second quarters, whatever, where they'll just go on these like 28-5 runs and guys are hitting threes and they just put the game away in 5 minutes, which is what happened. I will say, and I know I talk about Tatum a lot on this podcast and people are probably tired of it, but Tatum's just been awesome.
Yeah.
And there's an edge to him that he just didn't have last year. And I think a lot of it comes from Mazzulla. I think Mazzulla spends a lot of time talking to him, talking in his ear, motivating him, pushing to be bully, pushing to be tougher. Even that play when he got knocked down, when he got hurt in game two or game one, and Mazzulla's like, get up. Like he's just constantly trying to make him a beast. And you see it in these games. Like he's carrying himself down. He's got this little half sneer he does sometimes.
Yeah.
I just think he's been awesome in these games. Is
the new wrist thing that he's doing related to the injury? Is it like a celebration of overcoming the wrist injury? Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, it feels like you try to break my wrist, but it's still here, like one of those type of things.
But that's new. I like that too.
Yeah. But the thing is, Orlando can't shoot. And, you know, the over-under for them winning a game in this series was probably 0.5. They won their game, but they just cannot. They can't shoot. There was that, as it was slipping away in the third quarter, Franz took a three and it went like over the backboard and hit the other side of the backboard. It was one of those bricks. And it was just like, that's it. That's the highlight you need to know.
8 of 38 from three for the Orlando Magic. There's a couple of teams in the playoffs, like Houston, I think we'd fairly characterize as they're going to have trouble scoring the ball. But Orlando's going to definitely have trouble shooting the basketball. And then the other thing I like is Orlando does play phenomenal defense. And for a long time, the Celtics, I think, had no threes deep into the second quarter in this game.
They didn't have a three in the first half.
Yeah, I was trying to go back between these two games. Yeah. And it was pretty incredible. Like, so shout out to them. They do some good stuff and they force you into these isolation modes. And that's where Tatum really shined, I thought. And I know sometimes the Celtics are at their worst in those isolation moments.
Yeah.
But Tatum can get buckets in those moments. And they actually, if you look at the advanced stuff tonight, they really dominated in that isolation category. And duh, that's Jason Tatum. But, you know, it was 59-58, to your point, with six minutes left in the third quarter. And then I don't know what the final score was. I guess it ends up being 120-89.
Well, they were 36-13 in the third quarter. You know, I think the Celtics organization has been really impressed with Orlando. And I think there's a sense of relief that that team wasn't healthier this year, that that team was probably the third best team in the East. If you just, you know, you think like Paolo goes down for a while, Franz goes down for a while, Suggs goes down for 60, 65% of the year. But that team is really tough. They're not afraid of the Celts. They match up on the wings with Brown and Tatum, at least physically. They rebound. They had a couple playoff guys that weren't afraid to close on you. And I think if they just had a healthy team all year, I think that team would have been really good. And looking forward, like we were joking with Cerruti about, you got to sign Ty Jerome. Bobby Marks had a tweet where he tweeted where they were sitting going into the summer. They've kind of paid the piper already with some of their moves. They're like over, I think, $200 million with their salaries right now. Because Paolo already kicked in, Franz, you know, they paid KCP. Going down the line, like they're spending actual money now. And I don't, this is kind of the team. So their best move is going to be, can Suggs come back, be healthy? And then can Anthony Black make a leap, I think.
And Franz needs to develop the jump shot. And there's been some aggression there. You mentioned this. There's the hitch in the shot. It's not great. No. But if they can get healthy, Mo Wagner, Jalen Suggs, you know, I'm not going to put them in the class of the Celtics or the Cavs, but I like where you have
them. Could be Indiana.
Four. They could replace Milwaukee in that 3-4-5 tier. And they might have been there this year if they had just been healthy. You alluded to it. Their three best guys all missed significant time, and they ended up at the seventh spot and won a game against the champs. It's just like the rung on the ladder this organization is at right now. And I think they should expect to be a little bit higher next year for sure.
Well, the Celts definitely respected them because they brought Tatum back. They probably should have waited one more game, and they felt like they couldn't. And then they tried to roll the dice with not playing Drew and hoping he could be healthy for the Knicks series. Now he gets more time. But with the way the Knicks look, that second round series might not be as maybe grueling as you thought. The team you wouldn't want to play is Indiana.
You're confident. You're confident.
I mean, the way the Knicks look, the way the Celtics have looked for the last almost 2 years, like they have to be like pretty heavy favorites to advance to round three. Indiana had an incredible comeback against Milwaukee that I wasn't surprised by, even when they were down 7 with 45 seconds left. I had Indiana money line in a bet, and I was like, I'm not giving up. I feel like they might make a 3. I didn't expect them to win. I thought maybe they had a chance to force another overtime. But Haliburton, and I have a friend who's a big Haliburton person, and I was texting midway through the fourth quarter. I'm like, typical fucking Haliburton. It's like, God forbid he takes over and does anything. And then he took over and then some, like down the stretch in the fourth quarter. It's almost like he forgets sometimes that he could just go right by people. And what was interesting about the end of the fourth quarter in the OT, he went by Giannis. He cooked Giannis, I'm going to say 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. And you don't normally see somebody do that to Giannis. Including for the game-winning shot, I was stunned. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I said out loud, good luck with that for the game winner, because he's like, he's ISO'd on the left wing against Giannis, and he's like, I'm going to take this to the rack.
That's like, crazy. Yeah, he did it multiple times.
Yeah, good luck. And he did it. In that exact moment, I was surprised. We have to go through the 7-point lead in 40 seconds. So AJ Green misses a free throw. Nembhard uses like a Miles Turner screen, and Giannis, this is his fault, he's in drop coverage. So Nembhard just rises up and shoots a 28 footer. Okay. So 4-point game, timeout. Here comes the first big blunder. AJ Green inbounds and Trent gets trapped, anticipates a foul, it didn't come, and just throws a bad pass. Nembhard picks it off. Pacers pretty patient. Then we get the first big Haliburton play, the 3-point play that cuts it to one. Timeout, and then this is one of the most depressing plays in NBA history.
The Trent through the legs.
Oh, dude, I don't want to tell you what it reminded me of, Bill, because it'll
Buckner?
Trigger young.
Yeah, I thought Buckner. No, don't worry, I thought.
All right, as long as So, dude,
I mean, the dude he hadn't had 30 points all year, and he hadn't hit 8 threes all year, and he did it twice in 3 games. Trent, Right. He literally carried them down the stretch and then had two boneheaded plays that cost them the season, basically.
Yeah, I did a rare tweet myself. I said, you know, overtime score, Indiana 8, Gary Trent 12. Because it looked like with 1 minute left in this game, like Gary Trent had just saved the Bucks season. I feel like
he took 25 shots, Kirk.
Yeah. He became the second biggest player in Milwaukee after the Dame injury. He made huge three after huge three. And then these two mammoth turnovers, just a cruel, cruel end to their season. And potentially, Bill, the Giannis Antetokounmpo era.
There's a lot of interesting stuff, both from watching the game and the box score.
Yeah.
Brooke Lopez, 7 minutes. Kyle Kuzma, 12. So Doc basically bailed on Kuzma, who was somebody they traded Middleton for, beloved Buck, to get under the salary cap. They gave up AJ Johnson, who some NBA people kind of like, and there's some swap, I think in 28, that they gave up as well. And it took Doc Rivers about four games to get tired of Kyle Kuzma. Giannis leaves a 30-20-13 on the court, including 18 defensive rebounds. And the game ends with him getting burned by Halliburton and then taunted by Halliburton's dad, who just looked deranged. I didn't understand what was happening. And I can't believe Giannis had the restraint. But then Giannis is saying good game to Ben Mathurin. And now he's like doing the Fredo, Michael Corleone cup to the head. Like, and just looked like he was going to... Everyone was talking about this 100 guys against a gorilla. It seemed like it was going to be 100 Pacers versus Giannis at one point. The Artest Melee too.
Dude, what happened ending? With them? Yeah, I have no idea where to start with what happened after the game. From the Halliburton dad incident to the Mathurin hug that turns into a shove. And I've never
seen
any...
shove. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very strange.
Giannis was so mad at it. And you know, Giannis does a good job in the press conferences of being like, you know, I try to be humble and blah, blah, blah. But Giannis is a fucking badass, man. He gets mad. The switch can go off with him. And I really felt like there was going to be a massive melee at the end, which would have been bizarre.
There's some troubling end of game stuff where he's a very competitive guy and he's lost his cool. Do you remember early in his career, he tackled Mike Dunleavy?
Right.
Remember that
other time when he went and grabbed the ball? Yeah, it was Mike Dunleavy Jr. That other time when he grabbed the ball from Indiana that started this whole... Yeah, so he gets a little feisty.
Yeah, and I was worried. And it also evokes, and sort of to give the Pacers a little bit of credit and some shine here, it evokes like these incredible Reggie Miller moments from that franchise's history where they have, oh my God, what? So they just got another one of these, like, what was, you did the 30 for 30. Was it 8 points in 9 seconds?
That was one. Yeah, he had a bunch of them.
No, yeah, but the 7-point comeback, 8-0 run in 34 seconds is just unbelievable from the Pacers' perspective, too.
Also, in that building, which I know you've probably been there for a game, right? It's that and the Clippers Arena are the two best arenas. And just cool that happened right there. I thought Nesmith, you know, you look at the minutes and it's not really an accident. Halliburton, Siakam, Nembhard, Nesmith, and Turner just all playing huge minutes. Four of those guys were over 40. Mathurin, he switched the rotation a little. So Mathurin and McConnell basically just come in for these little 8-9 minute stretches. That's it. Some top end, not that much. But I think when we go to this next round, and I continue to think that they have a real chance against Cleveland to at least take it 6 or 7 and throw some punches at them. But this Halliburton piece, when he realizes he can get to the rim, who's stopping him on Cleveland? Like, this is a good matchup for him. They don't really have like a good defender to throw at him. I don't know. I just think they can hang in this series.
They're going to score points. I think the front line of the Cavs will have something to say between Mobley and Allen. And, you know, I like, you know, DeAndre Hunter. I like, Ty Jerome obviously deserves some credit. But I think, can we do a little bit more on Milwaukee? Like, you look at this
team. Let's do it. Can we do one more thing on Indiana? And then let's do Milwaukee.
Yeah. Go ahead.
What do you think the line is for Indiana-Cleveland?
Indiana-Cleveland minus 200.
Yeah. Cleveland minus 480.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. I'm telling you, nobody's respecting the Pacers. All right, let's move to Milwaukee, because that did feel like sometimes you have a feeling when it's a guy's last game for a team. I remember LeBron in 2010.
Yeah.
Leaving Boston in a very strange last game in general by him, but then taking off his jersey right at the end. And there's something, he just felt like, oh man, this is probably not ending well. The honest thing ended a little differently. It almost ended with a melee, but I'd find it hard to believe he's going to be a Buck next year. I don't see it.
And I was listening to Rob Mahoney and Zach, who were great the other day, and I'll stack on their point. Can you blame him? Look at what's happened around him at this franchise since they won it all. They've sort of taken the car apart piece by piece, and he's really all that's left. Like, Lopez is there, Portis is there, but Middleton and Holiday are gone. Bud is obviously gone. And what we see there is, you know, Chris Middleton for Kyle Kuzma. Are you kidding me? And Kuzma's not even playing in these games. Played 13 minutes, was 2-5.
I did the Waz Mahoney trade deadline pod, and I was on the record adamantly. I did not see the Kuzma thing at all, because he hadn't played a meaningful basketball minute or a good basketball minute for like a year.
Right. Since he was at Disney World in the pandemic. Yeah. But yeah, I think, can you blame him? I think is what Mahoney was saying. And I think it's fair. Like, he got them a title. Damian Lillard.
Can I blame him a little bit?
For leaving? For wanting to leave? You can. I mean,
can we blame him a little? Because they did that Jrue Holiday trade for Dame Lillard because they were feeling some pressure with him to do something because they weren't sure if he wanted to stay or not. And that was, I thought it was a panic trade when it happened. I was in the minority, but they gave up swaps in 28 and 30. They gave up their 29 first. They gave up Grayson Allen, who was had some, you know, at least was right. A bigger contract they could put in a deal. And when you think about it, they kind of shot their asset wad with Dame and Giannis that I just never believed that made them like a favorite in the East. I thought it was a little bit of a Hail Mary. And would they have been better off keeping Jrue? Maybe using those picks with Grayson Allen, Chris Middleton, whoever, and trying to add another piece to the foundation? I mean, in retrospect, yes.
I'll always remember I was at the Grant Williams game in Boston. I don't know if you were there.
I was.
Zach was talking about it the other day. It's like a sliding doors moment, right? Because I remember talking to everybody being like, man, it feels like we're going to be watching these two teams play for this Eastern Conference Championship for a long time.
All decade, yeah.
And then this team is just, and that's why I think it's an interesting macroscopic study. Like, you can talk about this collapse in the last 34 seconds here, but really this is a collapse that's 3 or 4 years long. And just goes to speak to the importance of ownership, transactions, roster building. But dude, yeah, I thought that Giannis and Milwaukee were going to be a big time factor for a huge part of the 2020s. And they simply haven't been since that Grant Williams game.
Well, it starts with the original Jrue Holiday trade, which helped win them the title.
Right.
But also included their 24 and 26 firsts. And swaps in 25 and 27, plus the George Hill Bledsoe contracts that they kind of were trying to get off of as part of the trade. But they're playing catch up. They're playing asset catch up after that.
Yeah, and they've not made any good draft picks, Bill. No. During this crucial time, where even if you get somebody like Dalton Connect or Corey Joseph, like when the Spurs were picking at the Derek White, we would always pick well at the end of the DeJounte Murray. You got to get those picks. To keep the momentum going, to add role players, and they just haven't been able to find anybody in the draft. They have AJ Johnson, Tyler Smith, Chris Livingston, Beauchamp, Isaiah Todd, RJ Hampton, Jordan Nwora, like nothing. That's their 2020s draft history. So it's just they haven't been able to build from the draft either, and that's a huge reason why this roster's so thin too.
Well, the red flag was when Lazary, the co-owner, he finished his managing partner thing and then he's like, I'm out of here. And he sold his stake to the Browns owner. I was like, that's curious. And it was like, you know, he was like 2008, the Big Short. He knew it was coming. Where do you want Giannis to go?
Oh, well, if San Antonio
just
is
as
an option,
a basketball fan, where do you want him to go?
I mean, I will, again, hand up. I'm very biased like you are with the Celtics. I will say the San Antonio Spurs. I think it would be a really perfect pairing, evoking the great Duncan, Tim Robinson era, or David Robinson, Tim Duncan era.
Tim Robinson, the Netflix comedian, Tim Robinson.
Dude, I saw his new 24 movie. What is that called? But anyway, I think that's, what about you?
San Antonio is the high upside, holy shit, like galaxy brain explosion. And they have the assets, right, to do it.
Yeah.
But that would be the one that I think made everybody go, oh no, what's that going to look like? I think that's a pretty weird fit in some ways offensively, but in other ways, the fact that Wemby wants to be 25 feet from the basket and Giannis should probably be playing closer to the basket, maybe that fits, but defensively, that sounds like an all-time nightmare from how are you going to attack the rim against those two guys? You might as well.
I think
just going to jack threes.
It's just like David Robinson and Tim Duncan 20 years ago. Yeah, it's that's why I love it. It's a fantasy of mine. Realistically, I don't know if that's a possibility. Have you thought about it, other destinations?
Yeah, I mean, Russell and I talked about it a little on Sunday, just like the obvious one's Houston, because they have... The problem for Milwaukee is they don't really have their picks. So it's not like they'd, you know, it's not like it makes sense for them to tank, because what are they tanking for? They don't have their picks to tank for. So what makes more sense is like them doing a 2-for-1 and a 3-for-1 and getting a couple assets back with that. So that's the Rockets, basically. That's one. And I think you're probably trying to get some sort of big piece. The Knicks are the other one that I think would be mildly intriguing. If it was a Towns, Bridges, Giannis going back with a contract, and you know, you start doing that.
There's been smoke around Miami and Giannis for years.
He's in the same spot there that he's in with Milwaukee. Miami sucks.
I agree.
They just got absolutely annihilated in the Cleveland series. They had their whole team. It's not like somebody was missing.
Again, when Ernie Johnson at halftime is like, this is the worst basketball game I've ever
seen. Yeah, we're not showing highlights.
He's saying that on air, by the way. He's not saying that at the water cooler before they go to the segment. He's saying that on air. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see. I don't think he's there next year, though. It did feel like there was some sort of finality to it. But you never know with these guys. Like, the key to me is he already won the title.
Yeah.
So when you've already won, it's like, I don't know. I like it here. But there's always been some Brooklyn buzz. The problem, like with a team like Brooklyn, is can you give the assets back that actually makes it make sense for Milwaukee, who can't tank? You know, what's the point of Milwaukee going 20-62 next year if their pick is going somewhere else?
They might not have a choice. We've seen that one before too. But
what do you think about Wemby, by the way? Anything?
Oh, I think there he's on schedule to return for next season. I haven't heard anything specific medically, but he was caught playing soccer in Costa Rica on video. I don't know if you saw that, Bill. It was a very interesting video. It was
I missed that video. That sounds great.
Hey, you got to be deep onto the Spurs message boards to see these great videos of Wemby playing soccer.
Do they rig the draft for Cooper Flagg for the Spurs like they did with Tim Duncan in 1997 or no?
Well, they just got two Rookie of the Years in a row, so why not go for three? I mean, shout out to Stephen Castle for getting the Rookie of the Year. Not a great class, but I thought he was deserving. I don't think they're going to rig the draft for the Spurs to get Cooper Flagg. But dude, Cooper Flagg can play, dude. This guy's going to change the fate of wherever he gets. This is another one of the biggest lotteries of the century, whoever gets that number one.
Well, the good thing is there's other good guys. Like, even if you get the third or fourth pick in this draft, you're going to get somebody who's like, even Edgecombe is like a real guy. Like, the Spurs got him and put him with Castle and all their wings, like, that's an amazing outcome.
Yeah, the Spurs have two picks they're pretty excited about. I think most likely outcome is 8-14, something like that.
Right.
And they could combine those and try to move up, or they've drafted pretty well in the past.
Or they send both of them to Milwaukee in the Giannis trade. Or Giannis they send and Wemby. I mean, talk about an international basketball team. That's like the league's wet dream.
I know.
Giannis is the greatest international story they've ever had, other than Hakeem. And And Wemby is going to be the true galaxy face of the league, they're hoping, 4 or 5 years from now, unless Anthony Edwards takes that too. Who do you have in Minnesota Lakers?
You have to take Minnesota at this point.
Okay.
You know, J.J. Redick, I think, you know, there's two reasons, depth and defense. The Lakers don't have much of either. And I think the stat was that nobody has ever played all five dudes for the last 24 minutes of a playoff game.
Right.
And JJ just did that. That tells you something.
Yeah, but Denver did the same thing on Saturday and it worked. Right. And now we don't have to hear about it anymore because they won the game. JJ did it. I'm not defending JJ. I don't understand why you would have paid Gabe Vincent for 5 minutes. I feel okay with Gabe Vincent out there. I didn't get that.
You'd like to think Jackson Hayes can do something, but
yeah, I don't know.
I think Minnesota just deserves credit. And the other thing is the defense. Los Angeles' defense is not good enough. Jaden McDaniels is exposing them on drives. And no disrespect to Jaden McDaniels. He's helping Minnesota win this series. But that goes to show that this is not the Thunder defense, dude. This is not the Rockets defense. This is the Lakers defense. It's been a red flag for me for a while.
No rim runner.
Yeah.
The rim, just not really involved.
And Luka, like, has not been great on defense. And again, the Western Conference is unforgiving. You want to call it a weak link era of NBA basketball, fine. We're hunting matchups, whatever you want to say. Anthony Edwards is just the best offensive player in the series right now. And on top of that, I think Minnesota has a better defense and more depth. So I'm taking Minnesota, Bill. I agree. I think there might be a free throw discrepancy tomorrow. Is it tomorrow? I'm guessing it's tomorrow.
I'm going tomorrow and I'm just going to be laughing the whole time.
You're going to games back to back, huh?
Oh,
sports,
yeah.
Sports
basketball, playoff basketball in LA, it's the best. Mm-hmm. Sadly, it's going to be over soon. Have you seen anything that makes you think it's not going to be Boston OKC?
I think Cleveland deserves a little more respect. And the Drew Holiday hamstring injury, Bill Simmons.
Not happy about it.
Yeah, not great. So look, Cleveland, I think if Boston is limited somehow, Cleveland is a very dangerous team. So Drew Holiday and street clothes is my answer to that question. Have I seen anything that makes me think Boston might not get there? If he comes back, I love that dude. If Porzingis is healthy, if Tatum is playing like this, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, Joe Mazzulla, I think they deserve to be favorites coming out of the East. But Cleveland is shooting the shit out of the basketball. They've been a great team all year. They've won in Boston, if I'm not mistaken.
No, Mitchell always does well against Celtics. They're always good games. It'll be a good series.
I'm picking Boston, but I will not be shocked whether it's because Drew Holiday's limited, somebody else goes down, that Cleveland wins the Eastern Conference. So I think that's the case. On the Western side, OKC, again, clear favorite. I don't see anybody in their class right now on the Western Conference side.
I don't either, but who knows with this Minnesota piece. And who knows with Golden State, because Golden State's loved playing OKC forever. And, you know, if I had to bet, I would stick with my preseason OKC Boston. But I think Minnesota and Golden State, and then the way Denver played tonight, who knows? All right, Kurt Goldsberry, writing for TheRinger.com, popping on our podcast. Always good to see you.
Thank you, Bill. Good to see you.
All right, our friend Zach Lois here. We're taping this before the four Tuesday games, but also before the two Wednesday games. And it's an awesome doubleheader of Golden State Houston, Lakers T-Wolves. I covered it on my pod on Sunday. You covered it on the Zach Lowe show on Monday. But we're here to talk about Draymond Green. And then we can talk about those games at the tail end. Last week we did Kawhi. We deep dove. This week we're going to do Draymond and we're going to deep dive. You wrote about him, I think 2 years ago, maybe right after the pool incident.
Many, many times, but yes, including taking that moment as a, hey, wait a second, oh, let's take stock of this guy's Warriors career, which felt a little like it was on shaky ground as the Warriors were approaching, you know, do we pay all of these guys, the young guys, the old guys, everybody, can we do that? And if not, who's the casualty?
It's felt, one of the things I was thinking about as we go into this, it's felt a couple times over the last 3 years that we might be at the end of the road with Draymond and the Warriors, right? And the pool punch was the first time. The second time was when, are they going to be able to figure out his contract or not? And then even this year, when it didn't really seem like they had any moves, and the question became, well, yeah, I mean, maybe would Draymond be somebody that they might be trying to flip? He feels, I don't want to say on thin ice, but it's felt a little rocky. And now I feel the best about it that I felt probably since the 22 finals. But even the 22 finals, he was getting yanked around. I don't think he looked particularly great. He looks great now. And this Curry-Draymond thing is now officially over a decade. And yeah, there's something really unique and special about it that just continues to persevere. And you could feel it in that Houston game.
It felt like the punch changed his standing within the Warriors. They've all acknowledged that. Like that was very hard for the team to get over. It was very hard for Jordan Poole to get over. And then you follow it up with the suspensions, right? Like last season, we get suspended for I don't know how many games. It was indefinitely after the Gobert incident and then the Nurkic incident. And then there was like the flirtation with Memphis in free agency that I think was at least semi-real, or the potential of it anyway. Yeah, I mean, but I always wrote, I mean, you know who's sad listening to this is the guy who signed with Dallas in free agency to play with Luka and make some spot up threes. And I always wrote that those three guys were, it was magic. Like, it's why you play basketball, to get that kind of level of feel and chemistry, and just you can do it with your eyes closed. You know where everyone's going to be at all time, that those three guys were meant to play together and should have played together forever. And at least two of them look like they are going to play together forever in their NBA lives.
It's the hardest thing to find in professional basketball now with the way guys move around. With the way now we have this first, second apron. You know, I'm always thinking like we had the last episode of Celtic City and it's built around Brown and Tatum. And it's just like, I don't even know if it's sustainable to have two guys making a max once it gets into the 60s, 70s anymore. What Brown and Tatum have, I don't think remotely approaches the Draymond Curry thing, because those guys actually had figured out how to elevate each other, which I think is the last level when you're talking teammates. Clay was in there too, but really Draymond, you could feel when Draymond wasn't in the game, what it meant to Curry, all the little pick and pops and handoffs and just that ESP that they had for each other. I can't think of like this, when I was growing up, they always talked about how the 70s Knicks had that, right? I think Bird and McHale kind of got there. I think Jordan and Pippen almost like defensively as athletes became so attuned, like they almost seemed like a pair after a while. It's really hard to get to. And with Draymond, I've always felt like there was going to be a shelf life and it was going to flame out. And he was just being more and more erratic as his career went on. He had the podcast. He's becoming unlikable in a lot of ways too. And then you watch like last night, and it's like,
I was going to say, he's almost ejected from like every third game.
Yeah, you're just teetering on this balance beam with him. And, you know, he gets that first technical and then you instantly get the flashbacks to 2016 game four when I'll always think LeBron knew what he was doing. I think it was a smart play. He tried to bait Draymond into retaliating, knowing that one more anything and Draymond was suspended for the next game.
And by the way, if you're right, and there's never going to, maybe one day LeBron will talk about this and try to make himself the protagonist of that one step ahead thing. Draymond has also tried to make himself the protagonist of like almost everything good that's happened for the Warriors, including, you mentioned the 2022 finals. The turning point for him was getting in Jaylen Brown's head. That was like being physical with Jaylen Brown, getting in his head. Oh my God, I knew we had him at that moment. I mean, he said that. But if you turn out to be right about this LeBron thing, what a tribute to Draymond Green's greatness, actually, that LeBron thought it was worth getting him out of the series for a game, right? That he respected him that much. But you mentioned all these prior teammate combinations. And what's super interesting about this one is that we've seen like Tatum and Brown. You went Tatum and Brown and backwards to some of the historical ones. We've seen the game has been ruled by big men, like you mentioned, McHale, low post guys, Shaq and Kobe. We can go on and on. And big wings. These guys are neither of those things, and they're both totally unusual superstars or stars, whatever you want to call Draymond in NBA history, and almost archetypal players that are specifically archetypal to this era of three-point shooting, which Steph revolutionized and accelerated a development that was going to happen anyway. And Draymond as the ultimate switch defender when more defenses were like, we just got to try and switch everything because this shooting is so massively important and swings so many games. And Draymond may not have a good sort of analog in the history of the NBA. Steph obviously has no analog in the history of the NBA. And Steph is one of one. Draymond became this weird archetype where for about 4 or 5 years, people searched the draft for, we got to find someone like Draymond. Can we find our Draymond? Could Grant Williams be our kind of Draymond Green? Grant
Williams is the funniest one.
Yeah, and it was, it's just so interesting that you go through those pairs of superstars and these two guys are just strange in terms of body type, skill set, and not only just strange, but strange and meant to play in this era and meant to play together in this era.
Yeah, like I remember he started playing when we were working together at Grantland and it was the early days of the five-man lineups and the plus-minus stuff, really early, like primitive. Like you're, people are carving it out in stone, the numbers, trying to figure it out.
We on websites that are dead, that are gone. Yeah,
like you get like a virus if you downloaded any of the websites. But there was some stuff with David Lee, and it was one of the first times, because I remember that there was that Grizzlies season, and I was on TV that year with Memphis, where the Rudy Gay lineups versus the non-Rudy Gay lineups.
To dark time. The Rudy Gay discourse. Dark times.
But remember they trade him and everyone went nuts. And the people who were actually like kind of studying this shit were like, they might not miss him. And then they make the Western Finals. But there was a similar thing going on with David Lee, who had good stats, good counting stats, hustled, was the type of guy that in the old school way, you'd be like, like that guy, good jump hook, like he does some good stuff. And he was a good starter. But poor Draymond was in there and the lineups took off.
Always the foil in this story, David Lee. A very good NBA player who could do a lot of good NBA things, including, remember that finals when they started to go small against the Cavaliers and it was like a garbage time of a game they were losing and David Lee was like heavily involved. Draymond, was picked 35th in the draft. Warriors picked him after they picked Festus Ezeli in the same draft. So it's kind of like the old, when I used to wax poetic to the Spurs about, Manu Ginobili is the greatest draft pick in the history of the NBA. You guys were such geniuses picking him at 50, whatever. And they would always tell me, well, if we were such geniuses, why did we pick Gordon Giresek like 25 spots higher in the same draft?
Right. That's the Tom Brady. They passed on him every round until the sixth round. Same thing.
And it's the same with Ezeli and Draymond, but maybe Draymond is the only one that expected anything even 50% as great as the career and impact he ended up having on a team that ended up being the absolute perfect place for him.
Well, he always had the confidence, right? So he won in high school and he won in college. And then he came to the pros. He wasn't playing that much. And I remember I was on Countdown. It might have been the 2013 season. We were talking about the Warriors in the playoff, 2013 or 14. And we were talking about how nobody could shoot on the Warriors other than Steph and Clay. Or I forget what it was. And I made some joke about, you don't want Draymond throwing up bricks or something like that. And he came at me on Twitter. And I was like, look at this guy. I kind of like the feistiness. So it was like, all right, that's cool. But he always kind of carried himself like, you guys don't realize how good I am yet. And then 2015, once Lee gets hurt and the rest is history. But that's, I always think about luck with this stuff where you think, it just became a story again recently about Bogut talking about the thing that I thought everybody knew, that Milwaukee had the choice between Ellis and Curry in that trade. And Curry's ankles were so, are you dubious of that one? Or you?
No,
think,
I mean, it's been whispered about for so long. I can we ever really confirm it? I mean, like who has anyone in the room in a public setting come out and confirmed it?
I always heard they gave them the choice. I don't think Lacob will ever admit it. Was Lacob even there at that point? He was, right? Whoever the owners were. Yep. Yeah. Because I think there was this real feeling that Curry's ankles were always going to be an issue, that this was never going to be a thing that healed. So you get luck with that. You keep Curry. You get
not only that, how about you get the discount on his first contract, 4 years, $44 million or something like that, that allows you to do all this other stuff.
That's luck number two. Luck number three is the Kevin Love trade, which is one of the most polarizing organizational should we do this or not sagas probably ever, to the point that they're asking people like us, what do you think? Would you do this? Would you put, and that wouldn't that have been ultimately Would that have been David Lee with Clay and maybe even Draymond in that trade too?
I don't remember exactly what it was, except that Clay was in it. I think I remember iterations being discussed with Clay and Harrison Barnes both in it. I don't remember exactly what it would have been, other than it was a clear, like, Clay was in the trade. It was right. Like Splash was Brothers or no Splash Brothers.
And I think Kerr was one of those who was like, I think the shooting Kerr that we have is like really special.
Jerry West was ready to throw himself in front of the train tracks on that. It's like, we're not doing this. This is a bad move.
Do you think
move.
He had like a Winning Time tantrum? Like the guy in Winning Time? Did he throw a chair through the glass window?
No, probably not. He hated his portrayal in Winning Time. And RIP to the logo, one of the best
Well, now we
ever.
Have the half court logo, Ben Simmons. He gets to the half court logo and he stops dribbling. But then the other luck thing was the cap spike in 16, and all of these things come together. And really the only unlucky break, I mean, until 2019, the only unlucky break was that Draymond, punching LeBron in the balls. Have you watched that clip recently?
I have not.
It is the most dubious. I forgot how awful it was. It might be number one for me for the league stepping in and trying to push a narrative. It is awful. It's comes up. He kind of swing because LeBron's standing over him. Like they get caught up and he's just standing over him like a little, almost baiting him. And Draymond gets up and he kind of waves his hand. And I just still can't believe that happened, because if you remember from what's the score in that Bucks game?
No. I'm trying to remember in my head the sequence of events from that series. So I'm looking up the game logs.
So I want to talk about that game really quick. Is game four, when Draymond gets kicked out of, or gets the flagrant at the end or whatever it was, they go into Cleveland. They're up 2-1 in the series. It's probably one of my favorite five Warriors games from that whole Curry era, because they lay the smackdown. Like Cleveland, they're toe to toe.
They pulled away down the stretch.
Pulled away down the stretch, and we're leaving that game going, they definitely have the best team. This is going to be the greatest season in the history of the NBA. And then the suspension happens in it.
So I was at the game, and I have this memory of doing something after the game with Jay Adande, maybe. I don't know why that would make sense. And, you know, when you're at these games, sometimes you're not looking at the video feed, like, in detail, and none of us realized at the time exactly what had happened and put together what was possible. And now this is why I was looking back at it. So that was June 10th, 108-97 Warriors win. There were 2 days off until the next game in the Bay, June 13th. And I remember they took a while to rule on it, because I went out to dinner on June 11th, I guess, with a couple of Warriors people. And they were like, I mean, the level of tension, it was not that fun of a dinner. Because
Bogut was already out, and Curry had his ankle injury. So they were kind of limping to the finish line as it was.
But it was not a fun dinner, because they didn't know still what was going to happen with Draymond. They were fuming about what they viewed as lobbying by the Cavaliers for a suspension. They were fuming because they thought the league was going to quote. I mean, teams see everything through the lens of their own bias and what is good or bad for them. And they viewed it like the league's going to scapegoat Draymond. We could see this coming, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, right.
And it was not a fun dinner. And then it was another full day until they announced the suspension. Then he goes and watches it from the A's. Well, didn't he go to the A's game or so? He was in a luxury box somewhere with Bob Myers, I remember.
That was indefensible. The
suspension. So you think the suspension was it? But it was a flagrant points thing. It was he had accumulated all the points.
You can't
right?
decide a finals like that, and it was bogus. I feel like it was bogus. The Robert Horry shove, when he shoved Kerr into the scorer's table, and a couple of Nash into the scorer's table, and a couple of Nash's teammates responded, because you're gonna move toward your guy who just got decked in the scorer's table. I thought that, and I thought the Miami New York thing in the late 90s was, those were the three that really stand out to me.
I'm reading it now. This is Kiki Vandeweghe. Kiki Vandeweghe involved. I remember they were waiting to hear from Kiki.
He's back.
The cumulative points system is designed to deter flagrant fouls in our game, Kiki Vandeweghe said. While Draymond Green's actions in game four do not merit a suspension as a standalone act, the number of flagrant points he has earned triggers a suspension for game five. And I remember he had a couple of really dumb ones in the early in that series, there was one where he like throws Michael. I think Michael Beasley is involved. He plays for the Rockets at that time, and he throws him to the ground in like almost garbage time of like a decided game. And you're like, what are you doing, man? And there was that's the Stephen Adams. This
well, hit Draymond Stephen Adams got to know Stephen Adams two groin, different times.
Yeah, when he got to Adams know his groin quite well. Still, well, the other now, thing, they're still going at it right now, Stephen Adams and Draymond Green.
The other thing is he comes back, Cavs blow them away in game five, game six, but Draymond comes back from game seven and plays the best game of his career. And I think he single-handedly keeps them in the game because Curry is running on fumes at that point. That game got super tense. The last 5 minutes is an all-time rock fight after LeBron hits the 2 threes over Azili because the Warriors are a guy short. And that Draymond game's wasted. And he's, I don't want to say he's the reason they didn't win the title that year, but that incident, I think they win in five. I just think they go back to Golden State and finish it.
It felt like we've seen this series 100 times, a million times before. Road favorite, wins game four, kind of a tough, gutsy win on the road, goes up 3-1, finishes the job at home. Like, we've all seen this. But we're taping this on Tuesday at 6:45. There's like three series resuming tonight that feel exactly like that in the current first round.
So when you wrote about Draymond, you used a word that I thought was a great word, and I wanted to put it in the context of history. So I always talk about glue guys, right? He's better than a glue guy.
Oh, no question.
He's not obviously not like a star role player. That seems too low too. But in the piece you wrote, you used the noun amplifier. How he amplified Steph in all these different ways. And I was thinking like, that's the right word, amplifier. So I was going through like my favorite amplifiers. Because I think that feels like it's more status, right? It's that you're not a role player. You're not a glue guy. You're like, I am actually better than a role guy. And not only that, but if you put me next to an awesome guy, I'm going to make that guy better. So Rodman, I think, is an all-time amplifier. I think Ben Wallace got there in the mid-2000s, 03 to 07. Horry is a classic example, 7 titles, but you could kind of fit him in. He didn't need the ball. He could guard whoever. He could guard different positions. You could always count on him come through when it mattered. Michael Cooper, Bobby Jones, Paul Silas, KC Jones was the famous one from the Russell Celtics. And then there's two old, I put older in front of these guys' names. Older Andre Iguodala.
Okay.
So we're like around 15 range,
double amplification for the Warriors.
He could have been the best guy on a 45 win team in his prime, but older version. And then I think older Drew Holiday too, kind of the Bucks Celtics era. And then the only other two I have, and their maybes for me are Derek Fisher and Bruce Bowen.
Yeah, Draymond's on another level from
that's
from
how
those
I feel
guys.
Too. I wanted to mark them down. But I think of all those guys, I think Draymond might have been the best amplifier. I think he might be the number one amplifier.
Well, let's be simple about it. You know, people do this thing with Draymond where like, well, what would he be if he got drafted by the Pistons and he doesn't have Steph? And how many even ex-players have sort of derided Draymond like this? He has Steph and Clay, and all he has to do is throw handoffs to them. Wow, big whoop, Draymond Green.
Yeah, but
he's not the same player without Steph Curry. Almost nobody would be. If you're ranking the reasons why the Warriors have 4 championships in the last whatever years, it's Steph Curry up here at number one, and then a giant gap between whatever you think number one and number two, what number two is. And that's fine and fair. Draymond has 2 things that I think are indisputable about. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he should be a Hall of Famer.
No question. Michael Cooper made the Hall of Fame.
Whatever. He's the greatest defender of his generation, which I would define as sort of like the post-KG Duncan generation of players. He might be the most versatile defender in modern NBA history. He is like, there's this alternate reality where, okay, so imagine the Warriors without Draymond Green, but they have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Harrison Barnes and whatever else. They're still awesome. They still might be a championship team. You could replace Draymond with, I use Clint Capella as my like stand in screen and dive spread pick and roll center, blah blah blah. But Draymond Draymond's ability to play center on defense and switch across every position is completely unique, almost completely unique in modern NBA history. And he's also, while at center, one of the greatest passers on the move in the history of the NBA. And both of those things allow the Warriors to play a style that is completely unusual and unique to them. And he's a big part of that. And he lifts up. Curry is better because of all the stuff Draymond can do when you give him four on threes, when you play a handoff back and forth with him, when you are when you can take certain risks defensively because you can play this super small ball lineup because he's a 6'6 guy, you can play center. The defense and the passing, this is a guy, he's led the team in assists like many times. It's not, that's what separates him from like your glue guy role players. Like those dudes aren't dishing 7, 8, 9, 10 assists, approaching triple, you can triple singles. He gets made fun of a lot for that, but those are almost triple doubles. He's a totally unusual player and made the Warriors both unusual and better.
Those four and threes you mentioned, he's got to be in the running for the best one in that situation. Can you, we see it all the time now, right? Like even the Nuggets Clippers series, the Nuggets are trying to put Zubats in that situation. Hartenstein.
He's been doing really well. Those really guys are really good at it.
Hartenstein, you know, they'll try to put him. Horford is somebody that gets in that situation, but through the league, when teams are trying to take out somebody, oh, let's do four and three, and the guy at the foul line will make the bad decision. The thing with Draymond is the Warriors just know how to cut. It's like, it was amazing to watch Butler immediately fit into that, right? It took him like 10 seconds to be like, oh, if they're going to do that, I'm just going to cut. I'll get layups.
Horford is a great name because he's still good at it now. And in his prime, when he was more athletic and faster, he was really, really close in sort of speed and decision making to what prime Draymond is or was, but he wasn't as Draymond's is, I mean, in the stupidest sense, is just so fast. He moves really fast compared to the average big guy who's going to set a screen and roll to the rim. And then he makes his decisions faster and more intelligently than almost everybody else in the league in that situation. It's a really hard, it's not a hard combination to find. It's like a borderline impossible combination to find because there has been no next to Draymond Green. And, you know, you can do the counterfactuals of like, well, does he even get those four on threes if he's playing with whatever anonymous Eastern Conference guards in Charlotte or Detroit or whatever? And the answer is he doesn't get them in the same way, with the same amount of space, in the same frequency.
He just would have changed how he played, I think. Don't you
but
think?
I do think he would have been a very good player, a great player anywhere, because the defense and the passing are translatable skills to any setting.
It was hard to recognize in the moment for a little while because we were so used to these 6'6" undersized guys getting drafted, going 15 picks too late. There was that whole Brandon Bass generation of NBA player in the 2000s where it was like they couldn't shoot threes. They were bangers. They were second round picks or low value guys. They were all missing something, right? They were either 3 inches too short, or they couldn't really rebound, or they, you know, David West was probably the best version of all of them. And Draymond just seemed like, oh, he's going to be in that bucket. And then to watch the player that he became. And then we didn't even mention like the competitiveness and I don't think anybody has ever been more of an alpha who probably has a worse basketball reference page, right? If like we can't look this up on StatHead on Basketball Reference, but it's like who has the lowest points per game, who carries himself like an alpha, he might be in the running.
Well, look, he's 35 years old. It's 2025. And in the first round of the playoffs, he stood up the Houston Rockets' best player, who has a massive height and weight advantage on him in the most important possession of maybe the entire series, stood him up, played impeccable defense, forced a miss, let everyone know about it, and let everyone know, like, hey, I'm 35, I'm old now, don't come at me like that. Go somewhere else on your crunch time possessions, Ime Udoka. And it was like, he's been sensational.
It would have been funny if Ime Udoka was like, have you seen the other guys on my team? Where else was I going to go? Was it going to be the Fred VanVleet step back? Like, what were my other options? Did you watch Jalen Green tonight?
Fred was rolling and Jalen Green was on the bench. So I was watching him on. I was actually watching Jalen Green on the bench because I was doing the body language doctor thing of like, is he engaged?
He was engaged. Ime, with 4 seconds left and no timeouts, leaving Adams and Şengün out there for the scramble three situation was incredible. I don't know if he just passed out. I would have dusted off Reed Shepard and just been like, can you just do a Peyton Pritchard impersonation? I know you haven't played all series.
I got to say, I don't want to plant bad seeds in your head or make this about the Celtics. Peyton Pritchard's on a little cold streak on half court.
He's like 0 for his last 60.
Well, the 30 to 60 footers aren't falling anymore like they were last playoffs.
Team knows it's coming. Going back to the amplifier thing and what you said about how unique Draymond is, if you take all the other best amplifiers, I don't think any of them work as well as he works with the Warriors because of the passing and the 4-on-3 stuff. Like if you just put Ben Wallace on the Warriors, let's take that 5-year Ben Wallace run and make it 10 years. And they would have been better, you know, from a rebounding standpoint. Defense, I'm not sure he would have been able to guard, you know, as many types of guys that Draymond guard, but he was an incredible defensive player there. And you don't really get anything else and you get terrible foul shooting. And you start listing like, oh, well, you also get this. And like, that doesn't work. I can't even think of anybody else I would put in. Can you? It's almost like Hartenstein, but a more playmaking version of him, but for 10 years.
The passing is what makes it sing on offense. And just like, you know, you go back and watch prime Draymond Green defend James Harden as like, sometimes the primary assignment, often on switch, you're like, oh, is he the best guy on the Warriors at defending this guy? And also the best guy on the Warriors years later at defending Jokic? Like that's a unicorn on defense. Well, doesn't
that, like the 17 Warriors, which I think have a real case, especially as the years pass for best team. I don't know if I'd vote for them, but I think they have a case. And one of the cases is when you're putting out Draymond and Iguodala and Klay, who was a really, really good defender in the mid-2000s. You have those three guys out there at the same time with Curry. And then Durant as the 6'11" Spider-Man can protect the rim and do all these different things. That might be the best five-man lineup I've seen in person. Even the Bulls always had somebody who was a little bit iffy on the movie poster, you know?
Yeah, Steph, Klay, Iguodala, Draymond, Durant.
I don't know if we're doing better than that.
Well, I mean, I remember being in Denver at a Nuggets Warriors game pretty early that season. Might have been the season. I don't know. It was sometime in that 17-18. And they did the thing where they were all on the floor together in the third quarter of the game. And it was just, you didn't even understand it was just like a tidal wave. And it was like you lost consciousness watching the game and it just became this blur of noise and sound and like blue jerseys flying around. And all of a sudden they had put up like a 22-2 run in 2.5 minutes. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it felt like watching this cyclone and good teams. The Nuggets were a good team. We're just looking around like, I don't even understand what's happening to us. Like, what are we supposed to do? Where's the ball? That guy. It was like unbelievable. Right. Well, it was too much talent, which everybody knew when they got him. It was like, okay, well, this is a wrap for a couple of years.
They broke the 2017 Cavs. And now as the years pass, it seems like the Cavs were like the underdog in the relationship. Meanwhile, they won the lottery 3 out of 4 years. They had Kyrie Irving. They traded a number one pick for Kevin Love. They had all these expensive role players like Tristan Thompson. I think they had, one of the five biggest payrolls in the league. And they had LeBron James still in his prime. Like that was not Hickory High trying to make it through the tournament in Indiana in 1954.
The 2017 Cavs are the best Cavs team of LeBron's two times in Cleveland. The team that lost in the finals that year, in my opinion, that was the best
Cleveland team. What's the best LeBron team to you? Tangent. About Draymond, but
I think
tangent.
13 Heat are going to be tough to beat. Whatever, that was the Heat team that had the 20-something game winning streak. And they ran into some issues in the playoffs that I thought were a little bit, frankly, beneath them. I thought they should have had an easier time in the East playoffs. And then they beat the Spurs. I think, 17 Cavs didn't win. 16 Cavs will always be another measuring stick team. I'm going blind. I haven't looked back at the numbers of what that six. Some of those teams, this Cleveland 2.0 teams, as you know, as an Eastern Conference basketball fan, kind of just cruise through parts of the regular season. The
conference
and
was terrible.
Yeah.
I think the first maybe two-thirds of that 2013 Miami season is the answer. But when they got to the playoffs, it wasn't just like that it got a little rocky with them. I thought Wade, that was when he really started to break down a little bit. And he just didn't feel like Dwayne Wade
Indiana
in the same way
anymore.
Indiana
took him to seven that year. And it was like, I just don't feel like this Pacers team should be taking these guys to seven.
But I do think the streak, which was just great, I think the streak had a little to do with that. I think it took a lot out of those guys. But I would say 2013. I also think, hard to say with COVID, what happens in that 20 season. But if you look back at the guys on that team, it's a pretty good team. You know,
we have legit LeBron, championship team.
You have Davis, who's in his late 20s. You got Caruso in there. You have Caldwell Pope. You have Kuzma before he kind of went off the rails.
And by the
way, Dwight Howard protecting the rim. That team was talented.
Relevant to this discussion, where are the Warriors at that time?
The 20. Well, that was the year. That was the Durant Clay combo injury. Durant leaves and Clay.
Which is why, you know, and they get three shots in the lottery during their sort of down period. You know, Kuminga, Wiseman, Moody. The payoff has not been substantial.
I'll buy your Moody stock right now.
No, I like Moody a lot.
Like you want him to put it for sale.
No. I think obviously the Wiseman thing is a huge bust.
Well, but that was also a COVID draft. I got to defend them a tiny bit on that. That draft, go back in that draft is bonkers.
Kuminga
is less defensible.
I don't even care. And Kuminga, they got in a masterstroke trade, selling as high as possible on D'Angelo
Russell.
That should
have been Franz. How do they not know to take the IQ 6'9"?
My point is
guy?
This. That's why you know it when you see it. Certain NBA championships just mean more than other NBA championships. Sometimes it's because of a star player finally winning one in his home city, like Dirk in 2011. Sometimes it's everything magical comes together for some unexpected team. Sometimes it's a team sort of stamping itself like a prior champion, sort of proving like that. Yeah, the first one was legit. The 2022 Warriors championship is one of those more special than a lot of other championships because a lot of time had passed since the last Durant one. It didn't feel all that likely that they would get back to the mountaintop. If you look back, like, it's a strange roster of dudes, many of whom are not there anymore. Clay, Poole, Wiggins.
Well, also Clay and Draymond at weird points of their career where we weren't even sure if they were elite guys anymore or not.
And they are taking advantage of this like interregnum in the West where like the Nuggets are in a waiting period for their guys like Murray and Porter to get back healthy. The Clippers are never healthy and now they are healthy. But they were like, that was a legit awesome Warriors team that leaned back into the style of basketball that Steve Kerr wants to play, the beautiful game, the ball movement, and had enough to squeeze out four series against teams that just kind of weren't ready for all of it.
Yeah, and the game four, I'm with you. Like, that one meant so much to the kind of Steph career, resume, all that stuff. But also, it seemed like they were never going to be in that situation again. You didn't even mention the Suns. That was another one where the Suns coming off the finals, they were, what were they, like 50-6 at one point? Just seeming like they're heading back and then just falling apart against Dallas.
Game seven, no, now we're really off track, but game seven, Dallas, Phoenix, and game seven, Boston, Milwaukee were the same day that year.
Oh my God, you're right.
And I was traveling to Chicago for the combine and my flight was like so poorly timed. Like it took off in the middle of the third quarter of Celtics Bucks and then it was going to land and Suns Mavs would already be, you know, first quarter, second quarter. And I was like, I'm going to miss like so much. And I land and it's like Celtics win by a lot. Grant Williams makes a million threes. And then I get to my hotel and I load up the Suns Mavs game. I'm like, what?
And it's over.
I don't even have to watch this anymore. This is crazy. What the hell is going on? And the Warriors win the title and Draymond is really good. End of story.
Let's take a quick break. All right, a couple more Draymond things, and I want to talk quickly about Golden State Houston. The generational defensive belt, which I'm not going to subject you to all the names since Bill Russell. I did make a list.
Okay.
But I think Draymond versus Rudy, basically for the post Kawhi era, which is about the moment he steps on Zaza's foot, all the way through, is the argument for the last 8 years. I would say Draymond. There's some nerds out there that would be resolute about Gobert and the Gobert rim protection stats. Gobert has more defensive player of the years. I think he's had more season to season, probably success, but that's the argument for the last 8 years. Look, if you're going to pick one guy who has the belt, it's those two, I think.
He's going to be the Shaq. The Shaq is to MVPs what Draymond is to Defensive Player of the Year, or like on a larger scale, even Jordan to MVPs. Like, we're all going to look back at the career and be like, he only won one, and these other guys won more than that. Like, it's a regular season award. He misses time. He gets whatever. Like, he gets injured. The team is so good, it doesn't even matter. Gobert is playing 82 games. But we all know it goes back to something Draymond himself said. 82 game player or 16 game player. He's a better 16 game player on defense alone.
You're just taking him in any postseason. You're always taking Draymond.
He's a better 16 game defender than Rudy Gobert. A 16 game, four series, four different kinds of opponents. He's better. And unfortunately for him, the belt is now going to be in San Antonio for a very long time.
So Steve Kerr said Draymond was the single best defensive player he's ever seen after game four. And he's been touting Draymond's defense a lot. He actually lobbied for him for defensive player of the year, which he's not a big award lobbyer, that's Steve Kerr. But he played with Scottie Pippen and he played with Dennis Rodman.
And Tim Duncan.
And I was just surprised. And Tim Duncan. But I mean, Pippen, that's a tough one. I would love to put like three drinks into Steve Kerr 10 years from now when he's not coaching Draymond anymore and actually get the actual answer for, is Draymond actually the best defensive player he's ever seen?
It's all a matter of, I mean, defense is still statistically sort of harder to parse than offense, right? So sometimes when you're at this level, it becomes a matter of taste. Like Garnett should be in the conversation, Olajuwon, you know, whoever. We can go through all the greatest defenders in NBA history. He's in the conversation. That's where Draymond Green is. Whether you think he's the best, fifth best, the fourth best, the third best, whatever, that's where he lives in this conversation.
Are you taunting me to do my belt lineage?
No, you are.
Sure, right, I'll rip through it quick. It was Draymond versus Rudy, so we're both going to say Draymond. Kawhi by himself. By the way, I thought of you when I was at that Clipper game Saturday. And Kawhi just took the ball from Jamal Murray.
When he decided, hey, it's at half court. How about I just go take it?
I'm going to take the ball now. Yeah. Jamal's like, wait, you can't take the ball. I said, no, I'm going to actually take it.
Thanks for participating in my exercise. Yeah. I'm just going to take the ball.
Every time he does that, I think of you. I think Dwight Howard's in there for a while.
By default? I'd have to look back at who's contemporary with who, who's old, who's young. But certainly was there. Many-time defense player of the year.
08 KG, I think, has the belt by himself. Before him, Ben Wallace. And then it's a three-headed battle for a while between Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, and Rasheed Wallace, who I think has been lost in history now. But Rasheed Wallace was just an awesome defensive player. When they decided to put him next to Ben Wallace, and people still seem to think that Lakers series was like, whoa, that was weird. It's like Detroit killed them in that series. Anyway. Would have them. Then there's like a GP versus Mutombo mid to late 90s kind of argument.
Okay.
Which I don't even know where I land. I'd probably default toward GP for a little bit.
Some good playoff history in that one too.
Yeah.
Sonics Nuggets.
There's a Hakeem Robinson before that. Then we have
I won't entertain Hakeem Robinson. I won't entertain it.
Well, I would pick Hakeem, right?
It's Hakeem. I'm not entertaining.
But I'm just saying that Robinson won Defensive Player of the Year a couple times. But
Admiral was incredible. He's a dream teamer. What happened in the playoffs in 1995? The rest of it is irrelevant.
Hakeem also the block steal stuff. That was one in my book. I made up the word stocks because it was like there was just nothing like this guy putting up basically like seven blocks and steals a game. Pippen versus Rodman was another one. And then it starts getting harder after that. But I did want to shout out Bobby Jones. I have another Draymond thing for you really quick. So from 2015 through 2025, he did not average 10 points a game. 9.6 points a game, 7.5 rebounds, and 6.6 assists.
Those are cumulative for those seasons?
Those are his per game averages for like 11 years. 46% field goal, 32% from three. In the playoffs, that bumps up to basically 12, 9, and 6. But I was like, wow, that's weird. I wonder if anyone has anything remotely that looks like that. So I rigged basketballreference.com. Who averaged 9 points or less?
You didn't go StatMuse? You didn't go StatMuse?
No, StatMuse, I don't try. Brazil and I hate StatMuse. We don't.
Alex Ovechkin.
Under 9 points, over 5 assists, and then rebounds, whatever.
Okay.
Everyone else is a guard. It's like Jose Calderon, Avery Johnson, Muggsy Bogues, Dick McGuire, Nate McMillan, Eric Snow, Brevin Knight, TJ McConnell, Rory Sparrow. This is like guys who played 600 games or more. And Draymond has way more rebounds than any of them, obviously. But there's like, you can't, even Basketball Reference is like, I don't know what to make of this. Like, who are, I don't know. You got me.
And not included in any of that search data is, can defend every position on the floor, right, including 7 foot centers, which Avery Johnson or Jose Calderon.
I wonder if they should add, like, almost like in chess where you have what's an ELO score for chess.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wonder if Basketball Reference should just randomly assign ELO scores defensively for every player. Like Draymond would be like, what, like a 97?
Whatever the highest is.
You give him 100?
I don't know. Is that where ELO? I don't play chess.
I feel like Bill Russell has to be 100.
Like, can we have multiple? We can only have one 100?
Yeah. I think Russell's the only 100.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's basically all my Draymond stuff. Other than, I don't know how much longer this goes. There's a weird, they've done a lot about this year, next year, the contracts are aligned. This is our last dance. I don't know if I necessarily believe that. But what's been cool is watching Butler and Draymond. And that play yesterday was like, Draymond, like, they're going to go to Şengün. I'm going to stop him. And Jimmy's like, and I'm going to get the rebound. And then Jimmy comes flying in. He probably has, what, like 10 pounds of Toradol shot in his ass at that point, and it's starting to wear off. And he comes flying in and gets the ultimate Jimmy Butler in traffic rebound, holds the ball, protects it, gets fouled. And he's like, that was my rebound. That was my rebound. Like the combo of those two guys, they're both insane.
The rebound, well, like Draymond does what he does. He stands up Şengün.
Forces a 14-footer when it should have been a 9-footer.
You know exactly. He's done it a billion times. That's what he does. Jimmy Butler is 35 going on 36, injured. And even when not injured, is like a below the rim old man kind of player now. And I mean that as a compliment. He's smart. He cuts. He hits people. He knows what to do. But he's not a high flyer. Never really was, but certainly is it now. That rebound had the feel. I watched it like 5 times this morning. It had the feel of like, this is everything I have left in my body at the end of this game is pouring in to jumping as high as I can with as much force as I can. Because Steven Adams is under there, and I know what Steven Adams is as an offensive rebounder. It was one of those great athletic sports moments of like digging deep and all the cliches we talk about. That rebound is like, he's not jumping that high again, probably for the entire rest of the playoffs, as long as Golden State goes on. That was like, this is everything I got. If this game goes to overtime, I'm going to feel the pain of this jump for the rest of this game, but I got to get this rebound.
Well, I thought the Rockets were going to win last night. I wasn't expecting the Jalen Green stink bomb, but they did get a crazy Van Vliet game. But it came down to the fear. If you were taking the Rockets in this series, the fear was what's going to happen late in games when both teams have to execute. How is this going to play out? And it executed. It happened the way it happened. The reason I thought the Rockets were going to win because I didn't think Steph was going to have a big game because he put out so much on Saturday night. I was like, well, they're not getting that again. And Butler's hurt. How are they going to get to 100 points? I didn't realize Dylan Brooks was going to talk shit to Butler and just activate playoff Jimmy. And now it just feels like the Rockets are going sideways and we're just going to wait for the honest trade now.
Trade machine summer. This is a Draymond Green segment. Should we talk about that Draymond Green was like on the verge of getting ejected? I don't say he was on the verge of getting ejected in that game, but the technical, a flagrant, and the Tari Eason thing where he rolled over him and
tried to goad him into
his foot hit his neck. Like,
yeah,
I'm watching that. I'm like, they could throw him out of the game for this. Like it is maybe an accident. It looks like an accident. It can be plausibly explained away as an accident. But the thing about Draymond Green's accidents, and there are a lot of them, is that it never feels as if he's trying to calm the accident or restrain his limbs from moving in ways that will accelerate and worsen the accident. It's always like, my legs are doing this. You're in the way. My legs are going to keep doing this. I'm not going to try to stop my legs. My legs are doing what they're doing. And if your head's in the way, your head's in the way.
Right. And there's been other guys over the years like that too. Like, remember when Ron Artest just elbowed James Harden in the head and basically knocked him out? And I don't think it was intentional, but I also think it was the same thing. It was like, hey, my elbow needed to go forward and that guy's head happened to be in the way and I had to do it. Some guys, Bowen, it was never an accident. I never felt like it was maybe a partial accident, but he would kick his, what was that? He kicked somebody in the face running by a three that time. Remember?
I can't remember who it was. He
kicked him right in the face.
And they're reviewing the play. And I'm like, it doesn't really, it looks mostly like an accident. It also doesn't really look good. He already has a technical. He's always seems to have a technical. And as you well know, Draymond Green with a technical is like a superhero. He's impervious to technical number two for the most. He can do whatever
Draymond
he wants.
Draymond with five fouls is the other one. He had five fouls yesterday, felt like for an hour. And he's just doing the vertical, stopping everybody and never gets the sixth foul. It's pretty crazy.
He's still a genius. He had a play earlier in this series. I don't remember who he was guarding, but somebody for the Rockets had the ball at the elbow and went to pass to somebody, Draymond. It was Draymond's guy. Had the ball at the elbow, and he went to pass to a cutter. And Draymond did the thing where he read his mind, and it was like almost as if he was ahead of the pass. He starts drifting away from his own guy. And the pass comes, and it's essentially a pass to Draymond because Draymond has out-anticipated the guy who's actually initiating the action, and he passes the ball, and Draymond's just there. And it's like, it's not even just in sync with the ball. He's ahead of the ball. He still makes those plays every game.
You know who else does that? And I notice it every time I'm in person, and Saturday it was at another level. It was Jokic.
Sam Hauser?
No, Jokic.
Oh, well.
There's so many litmus tests for how much people are actually watching basketball. And one of them is if somebody tries to tell me Jokic is like a shitty defensive player, it's like, go fucking watch him in person. Just blow up plays. Just be like, oh, you can do that. I'm going to dive right as you're about to do that pass. And now you're jumping in the air because you thought you had that guy. And now you're like, just kind of throwing it over your head. He's spooky how he can reach it. He had a pass after the game three, where they doubled him at the top of the key. Chris Dunn was in the corner on Christian Brown, and he kind of leaked over, and Jokic was facing the other way like this, and Christian Brown is behind him this way. Chris Dunn comes over. He feels Chris Dunn and just whips the pass to Christian Brown.
That's his signature.
If you watch it, you're like, there's 10 seconds where you don't know he's there. How did you know he was there? I have no idea.
That might be one of his signature passes. And I've watched dozens of them at this point. And sometimes I go back and I rewind it. And I'm like, let me try to find
the last time
that he made eye contact, that his head was facing the direction of the player he ends up passing to. And sometimes you just can't find it. Like, there's a defensive rebound. He has the ball. He's looking over here. And then the pass comes. You're like, I don't really.
Well,
but
what's crazy about that play was he didn't know it was Chris Dunn who was coming over to double him. So he had to also know instinctively, Chris Dunn is coming over to double me, even though I can't see him. And then when he does that, it's like some fucking Star Wars shit when they put the helmet on Luke Skywalker. And they're like, Luke, just use the force. Like, he can do that.
Well, it's fitting that we're talking about Jokic's passing and Draymond's defense in the same breath, because that's about right.
I think this has been an awesome basketball round of games, and we didn't even know what's going to happen in these four that are about to happen. Quickly, Golden State, who do you think they'd much rather play, the Lakers, or kind of would rather play the Lakers, or wouldn't really want to play either, if you had to guess? Assuming they get there.
we're definitely at the stage of the Western Conference playoffs where it's just, okay, well, that path sucks. That path sucks. That path really sucks. I would say, given the fact that J.J. Redick just played the same five guys for an entire half of basketball and they looked gassed at the end and one of them is 40, and they don't have the Anthony Davis piece that kind of troubled the Warriors, I would say the Lakers are probably a better matchup. The Warriors would probably prefer to play the Lakers a little bit because just Minnesota.
That's where I've landed too, especially from big, 4 weeks ago when they went head to head.
Big, nasty. And I mean, but it's no picnic playing Luka. You look at Luka and LeBron, or like, I'm really picking that team. But I think given the respective states of the teams, I think, yeah, I would pick, if I were the Warriors, I'd say kind of rather play the Lakers.
Yeah. And plus there's the Edwards. How real is this? This was last year. So here it is. Anthony Edwards has joined the party. He's now a superstar. And this year, there's now this next step that might be happening. I don't want to jinx it.
But I think he's at the party.
He's at the party for you.
Yeah, he's at the party.
If you're starting a franchise right now, I want to do first take second, because I think I saw this today. Would you rather have Luka or Anthony Edwards next 5 years? Because I think I'd rather have Edwards. It's crazy. Next 5 years? Sounds. Yeah, next 5 years.
I think I'd still take Luka.
Yeah. Because you're getting...
Great choice, by the way. Can't lose.
With Luka, you're at least getting the what if he shows up on a mission this year piece. Like Shaq for those 3-4 years with Shaq in the late 90s. Where it's like, what if he takes this seriously one season? It's now we're supposed to pretend that never happened. Okay. And then... No chance Lakers come back? Kind of a chance? Sort of a chance? Or you feel like that was their desperation game?
If you have home court for 5 and potentially 7, you got a chance. I would be surprised if they came back. I would be surprised if this got to 7. I would be surprised if it got to 7. I just think you gas out your team like that. You've sent a message to the team like, we got to win this game. You don't win it. Minnesota's hungry. They're young. They're fresh. I would be surprised if it got back to 7.
You know what they need to do? Hope that Anthony Edwards goes into I got this mode. Like, they're going to probably win game 5 because they'll get every call. Game 6, you hope for some hero ball from Edwards. You hope for the Tom Thibodeau Doc game 7 2010 final strategy of let's try to use Edwards's desire to be the hero against him and maybe just hope he makes some bad shots and kind of shoots them out of the game. I think
he also could just dunk you into pieces and end your season very quickly.
He is certainly unafraid. Zach Lowe, we ran out of time. I was going to ask you to rank your favorite Ringer people, but we can do that the next time.
Oh, that's a spicy one. Another time.
Yeah, another time. Podcast for you on Thursday.
Yes. Good to see you, my friend. So coming off 2 good games Wednesday night.
Yeah. Good to see you, my friend.
Always fun.
All right. That's it for the podcast. Thanks to Goldsberry and Zach. Thanks to Eduardo and Gahau for helping behind the scenes. Don't forget about new rewatchables. Went up on Monday night. Someone watch over me. You can watch that on the Ringer Movies YouTube channel. You can watch all the stuff from this on the Bill Simmons YouTube channel or as a video podcast on Spotify. I'm going to be back on Thursday with more stuff, some basketball, maybe a little bit non-basketball. We'll see. I'll see you in a couple days. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. For Kansas, in affiliation with Kansas Star Casino, or 18 plus and present in D.C. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Call 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut or visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelpline.ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.